In the Moment Living Undercover by Fnelt. Read by
Blue Dreaming.
Nonplussed.
Sun Kitten Shash.
Poem Reads.
And
CC Rambles.
Summary. Five times black and white pretended to be each other.
1. Read by Blue Dreaming. You don't have to fight for me, White says. He doesn't know what to do about Black's split lip. It's not the first time, either. Black is always throwing himself at their mean classmates who push White around and take his stuff. White knows he should be stronger and not such an easy target, but he doesn't know how. When people are mean to him, it hurts, and his stupid face shows that. His face should be capable of hiding it, because he and Black share the same face, after all, and Black never lets anything show. Only the physical reminders. People need to know not to mess with us. Black stares into the distance, like he's looking at someone who has upset him. Later, Black will tell him to fight back, to throw punches, to demand better. But not yet. Now, Black bundles them together. They need to treat us with respect. They can't mess with us. They aren't separate. Yet. So White doesn't argue. He says, Mom will be upset. Something flickers in Black's eyes. I'll cover you, White says. They go home together, but Black waits off to the side while White goes to the front door. He hands his bag and coat to Auntie and puts on slippers. Mom is in her office. She takes papers home on Thursdays so she can see him and his brother. He steps inside and closes the door, which is Black's signal to slip inside the house. White knows Black better than anyone else in the world. His face is the first one he sees in the morning, and the last one at night. White fell once, when he was little, a stumble on the road, and he gashed the skin of his knee open on a bit of exposed metal. It bled in big splurts. He remembers the fall, the bright redness of the blood, and then he remembers looking at Black and seeing upsetness on his face. Only then did he start to cry. White looks to Black, like a mirror, like White can't know his own feelings until he can see them on his brother's face. He pulls up everything about Black like he's putting on a jacket. He lifts his head, but slouches his shoulders. When he steps, he puts his feet down firmly, heel first. He walks up to his mother's desk and stares at her. She types for a few more seconds, then looks at him, a flick of a glance. Then she stares. Don't act sullen with me, White. White tries not to react, but he can feel his eyebrows want to twitch. He says nothing, because Black would say nothing. We're having Western food for dinner. Your father wants you to start adapting to it. It's a clear dismissal. He turns. And send Black down. His steps stutter. When he gets up to his room, Black is in it. Their parents want them to have separate rooms, but they don't see the point and are always switching up where they stay. This room is supposed to reflect what White likes, so it has a picture of the sea in it and some comic books. But it's Black who likes to read anything he can get his hands on. Black's room has rock band posters and dark paint, but White likes the heavy beat. It drowns out the sound of their parents fighting. It grabs him in the chest and pushes him to stand up taller. True to form, Black has a cheap paperback open on their pillow, so he can lie on his stomach to read it. When White takes a step in, Black rolls over and sits up. White gets ready to apologize, but Black must see it on his face. She caught you, huh? Sorry, he says. Black shrugs. How does she always know? White asks, plaintive. Black sits for a long moment. I think I know, Black says. White opens his mouth to ask. But I'm not going to tell you. White pouts. Black shakes his head at him, but he's smiling a little. Not enough to pull on his split lip, but enough to change the shape of the wound. Why not? White asks. Black doesn't answer.
2. Read by Nonplussed. White has been taken from him long enough for Black to see all the ways he disappoints his mother. He thinks she must have lost the game of rock-paper-scissors when they were choosing which kid to keep. White's been away for 6 months now. That's how others have taken to describing it. Only one sibling in the class now that your brother is away, his teacher said, and smiled. Black hates it. Away, like it's a vacation and not a separation. Away could mean anywhere, could mean the next room, like if Black wandered into the study to raid the bookcase there, White might be sitting in an oversized chair doing homework. It's an abuse of language. Words are for describing the world, not hiding it. But that's adults. They have all the power and they use it to tuck anything untidy away. Like Black not being the kid his mom wants. It's particularly obvious at the parties that his mother drags him to. Black puts on a suit, wears shiny shoes, gets his hair combed back. He looks flat, like he's been pressed into a plastic shape. He feels sharp and brittle like plastic, too. People speak to him, and he smiles with too many teeth. Sharper and sharper the more he picks out the words behind their words. In contrast, in the same situations, White is polite and soft-spoken. He keeps conversations going. He knows how to ask follow-up questions and can look like he gives a shit about the answer. White isn't trying to suck up, he just genuinely is trying to listen. When White's with someone, he's fully there. Black feels like he's looking through people. Black mostly isn't expected to talk to the adults. He needs to do a round so everyone can see how his judge mother has an heir, is a worthy networking partner because she can do favors for them now, but also as an investment in their legacy. She doesn't say it like that. She says justice is the law and the law doesn't do favors, but she gives tips on how to frame cases. She chooses which cases to dismiss and which to review. Black sees all this happen. Adults think he's too young and stupid to understand, but he's smart, and he listens. He listens to it all. So he does the circuit, and he takes the information that they're not saying to heart, and tucks it inside. After that, he's meant to go off and make friends with the other kids. The problem with the other kids is that he's bitten or beat up almost all of them. Not recently, but even they aren't stupid enough to forget. At best, they are wary of him. At worst, afraid. Their fear makes him sneer. Black thinks it's simple. Talk shit, get hit. He saw a delivery guy with that on a t-shirt once and he thought, yeah. Simple code. Don't talk shit, and Black doesn't have a problem. But since they have, at various points in their life, earned Black's justified ire and gotten consequences for it, they could at least wear their hits with more grace. Well, instead of letting it swell them up, rotten under the skin like overripe fruit. There must be someone extra important at this party, because instead of his mom giving him a push and sending him off to terrorize the spineless future leaders of Thailand that are lurking in another room, she grips his shoulder and wheels him over to a man in a grey suit. He's not nearly as old as most of the men here, so Black wonders how he bought his way in. Black would guess that he's someone's son, but if he is, his father isn't hovering over him smugly. His mother keeps a grip on his shoulder when he introduces the man as a businessman called Tawi. Her fingers dig into him like talons when she introduces him back. He can feel the point of each nail through the fabric of his suit. He opens his mouth and his mother squeezes harder. He asks himself if he wants to talk shit, and for once in his life, decides maybe this isn't the time. Black only has one model for how to behave if he isn't going to act like himself, and he can picture it perfectly. He puts his hands together in a Y, then exchanges meaningless pleasantries for a minute, maybe two, the subtext of which is, we are not threats to each other, we share the same purpose and goals. Then his mother excuses them both, a bit of smooth social extrication that doesn't make it look like they're rushing away. She walks him all the way back across the room, like he might lunge back and rip the guy's throat out if she didn't restrain him. Which he wouldn't. He wouldn't. He doesn't ever do anything more than sit and listen and seethe. He doesn't know why that is so much worse than the way the other kids laugh too loud and talk too much. When she lets go of him, she turns him around and stares at his face. She's looking for something. You really do look exactly like him. She looks sad. Black's mind goes staticky. He yanks himself out of her grip. He can't. He has to leave. He starts walking blindly. Hey, whoa! He hears. It's Todd. Black grabs his wrist. Get me out of here, Black says. Todd, to his credit, doesn't hesitate. He moves through the crowd, smiling and nodding at people as he goes, and Black follows in his wake. They get outside. Black breathes in the night air. This place's overproduced garden is filled with jasmine, and Black pulls the scent into his lungs. If I bit someone, Black starts, would you stop me? Todd tucks his hands in his pockets and smiles at him. I wouldn't expect anything less. Besides, they'd probably deserve it. That's right. Black feels himself settling into it. That's who he is. Anything else is creating the ghost of someone else and haunting everyone with it. And White is still alive. They both are.
3. Read by Sunkitten Shash. White's father is stationed in Russia, but he travels to meet with other diplomats and for events. There's an economic symposium in Vienna, and as it coincides with winter school break, he's traveling along. He likes going on these trips. They show him more of the world and, White thinks, will help prepare him for his future in the diplomatic service. He's never been to Vienna before. The city has given itself over to Christmas in a way that White feels fascinating. He's been in Russia for many years, and they celebrate it in January, but only some do, so the experience of it is patchy, similar to what he grew up with. Not so here. Every building seems to have lights. Every street has decorations. He wonders if other countries are like this. Movies make it seem so, but movies have never fully captured the ubiquity and scale he's experiencing here. He's been to Switzerland for skiing, of course, but that was after Christmas. He says as much to his father, who chuckles and says this is nothing in comparison to the Philippines. White would like to see it, if for no other reason than to be warm, truly warm again. It never gets hot in Russia. Being cold makes White aware of his limbs at all times. His hands and feet are colder than his chest. When he touches himself, he can feel it. White thinks about summers from his childhood, and what it felt like to be hot, like his body was lit up inside and out. He felt like he was in the world, part of it. But still, there is a charm to the crisp bite of the wind, the crunch of the snow. It forces him to be aware of the fact that he has a body, a thing that he wears and has to be maintained. He goes to a Christmas market. The square is filled with people in large coats and scarves, milling about around wooden stalls bedecked with greenery and red ribbons. They sell candles, wooden ornaments, and other Christmas presents, as well as treats like Glühwein, and various types of ginger cookies ranging from the firm kind with snap to soft, chocolate-covered ones filled with jam. White decides to try as much of what's available as he can. It feels a little wilder than he normally is, so used to practicing restraint, but between his clumsy cold body and the spiced smell of the market, he thinks, why not? He thinks that if there was a moment to throw himself into something, it's this. He doesn't know anyone here, after all. No one is going to report back to his father about his behavior. It creates a weirdly disconnected feeling. He's here, but his body feels not quite his own. He's alone, but surrounded by people. Possibly the most alone he's ever been. White's a twin. He wasn't built to be alone. Maybe because of all of this, when a vendor asks for his name for the packaging, he says, Black. The woman nods, writes it down in clear block letters, and hands it to him. He slides it into his leather satchel. After that, he thinks, why can't I be black? No one is expecting him to be white, after all. They don't know who White is. White imagines what Black would be like now. The confidence he had as a kid, so often frustrated by adults curtailing him, allowed to flourish. He'd stand straight, probably. He'd speak directly, with a touch of command. His sharp intellect and observational skills, he'd notice the small robin ornament at the back of the stall, overshadowed by the more garish painted nutcrackers and sparkly snowflakes. If someone bumped him, he wouldn't be knocked over. He'd stay standing strong. Black, who cares about every person, would see a lost child and take them to the front entrance so she could be reunited with a parent. He wouldn't be bashful about it. He'd be calm and assured without feeling like he had to make meaningless chatter to fill the silence. When Sophia is being squeezed by her mother and kissed all over her cheeks, Black would melt away before he could be thanked. All of this, White does. He goes back to the hotel and unpacks all of his treasures. He puts the cookie assortments out for his father. His fingers brush against the tissue around the robin ornament. Their hotel suite has a Christmas tree set up in it, a small fake one in the corner of the room by the window. White takes the robin out of its wrapping and brings it to the tree. He hangs it, taking the time to select a place where it will look its best. When he does, he straightens up and catches his reflection in the window. It's dark and translucent due to the quality of the light, but White can see the sharper lines of his face, the straight set of his lips, all the traces of black that he's wearing. He looks serious. I miss you, Black. Even as he sees Black in himself, it slips away just as quickly. His face loses its edges, lips curving around the shape of regret, eyes opening wider, always seeking out more, trying to hold on. When he was little, Black once said he thought he knew why their mother could tell when White was pretending. White didn't get it then, but he thinks he does now. There's something in White that's always reaching out, that he can't hide. White wonders where Black is right now. That night, in the large hotel jacuzzi, White does what he always does, and sinks his head under the water. I'm here, he says to Black across oceans. Do you feel this?
4. Read by Poem Reads.
What the fuck is this? Black says, pushing his phone under White's nose.
White puts his hand over Black's and pushes the phone back so he can look at it. It's the Netflix home screen.
It's Netflix, White says.
Black's lips thin. He flicks White in the forehead.
Ow,
White says, pointed. Black scowls. White looks at Netflix.
Looks like Netflix to him.
The Continue Watching has his shows. Extraordinary Attorney Wu, Bridgerton, Pera Palasta Getsiyarisu, and Silver Skates, which he started with Sean yesterday, but Sean fell asleep. White is waiting for his moment to spring it on him again. He will appreciate this cheesy Russian period drama if it's the last thing White does.
This is my account, Black hisses. Do you see these categories?
Black reads them out.
Heartwarming love stories, epic period dramas, dramas with strong female leads. What have you done to my algorithm?
White makes his eyes wide behind his glasses.
I just wanted to watch some TV, P. Why don't you get your own Netflix?
Black runs his fingers through his hair in agitation. Bits of hair stick up.
I don't have a Thai bank account, White says reproachfully.
Black knows this, and with his criminal record, it's hard to get one.
You could at least use your own profile.
Black is almost shouting now.
Hey, Sean says, coming into the room and hearing Black's tone. Speak to him nicely.
Black scowls at him.
He's my brother. I'll talk to him how I like.
White doesn't want to sit through the 347th iteration of this fight, so he puts a hand between them. He scrolls on Black's phone.
Here, White says. Look, that one's a category for you.
It's educational nature documentaries. Black loves to watch tropical fish.
This isn't over, Black says, pointing at White.
He takes his phone back, though. He stomps his way out of the room. Before he goes, he turns back and throws over his shoulder,
"Create your own profile!"
Sean looks at White, baffled.
What's that about?
White shrugs. Then he switches the topic. Ready to finish that movie? White bites his lip to avoid laughing at the way Sean shrinks in on himself, like his spine is trying to escape having to sit through 2 hours of period spectacle.
Maybe he'll take pity on Sean and put on an action movie.
Maybe.
5. Read by C.C. Rambles. White texted Sean an hour ago to meet him by the plaza by the mall. There wasn't a lot of detail in the message, but it wasn't that unexpected for White to want to meet up if he's been out and about, so Sean doesn't think much of it, just hops on his bike and goes over. He's been waiting for 15 minutes and hasn't seen White yet. He's just scrolling on his phone, tracking a few hashtags that he thinks are interesting. Then he sees a flash of hair out of his eye, familiar enough that it registers on his subconscious, and he looks up. There's White. Wait. He looks closer. Up on the stairs, walking down to where Sean is White. Except the walk isn't right. It doesn't bounce up and down. Instead, it's smoother, faster. And instead of White's usual windbreakers, it's a sleeveless vest. Sean sees the upper arm tattoo, the 3 bands. White always covers those. Black told him what the tattoo means, still a secret to everyone else, and after that, White said it wasn't his to show off. So now Sean wonders, what's Black doing here? Was he out with White? Then the person gets closer, and Sean doubts again. This can't be Black. Black walks like an ion cloud. He repels and attracts in equal measure, and either way, everyone around him can feel his force. Black exists in the world like an imploding star. Something nuclear is occurring beneath the surface. Too much time near Black, and Sean's teeth start to vibrate, but the power is undeniable. There is no one in the world like him. White is also full of energy, but it's like a clean wind after a rainstorm. So this isn't Black. White gets closer, and Sean throws an arm around his shoulders to pull him in. White pushes him off. Something in Sean slips sideways. Is he wrong again? Is this Black come back to finish him off? Sean's over it now, but there were times when he'd close his eyes and see Black's face looking down on him, pitiless, through one half-swelled shut eye. A reminder of what almost was, that leaves Sean cold and sweat-sticky. The thing that makes it better for Sean is White, reaching out for White and having White reach back. He always does. Always has, until now, when White pushed him away. White is looking around. He doesn't see the way Sean is staring at him. When he looks back, Sean wants to reach out again, grab his hand, but he doesn't dare.
White?
White looks distracted. He flashes a smile, and it's so White, and then he schools his face.
Hey, Sean, thanks for coming. Let's walk around.
He's still holding his face in stern lines. Sean's feet feel rooted to the ground.
What's going on? Oh, sorry.
White leans in, close enough that Sean can smell him. He doesn't smell quite like himself. There's the motor oil, that scent that they all share, but instead of the coconut from his hair product, Sean can smell cigarette smoke. Sean doesn't smoke inside because White hates it, so White shouldn't smell like that. Black needs an alibi, so I figured big public space, spend some time here, buy some stuff on his credit card, ping his phone here, easily done. The relief floods through Sean like hot sugar. That's why you wouldn't hug me. He didn't mean to say it, but he's not embarrassed. Nothing about White or their love embarrasses him. Understanding flashes across White's face, followed by a guilty expression. White takes half a step forward, then remembers himself. Over here, White says. Sean follows him to a couple of big planted trees in pots next to a fountain water feature. It's as masked of an area as there can be out here. As soon as Sean steps in close enough to the shrubbery, White pulls him into a hug. Sean buries his face in White's neck, nosing past the surface scent on his clothes to the profoundly human scent below. That's his White.
I never want to push you away, White says.
Sean steps back. You're so sappy. He pretends that White isn't speaking for Sean's benefit. White knows Sean's nightmares better than anyone. White smirks.
You're worse than me.
Sean can't deny this, so he deflects. What do you want to put on Black's credit card? White gets a mischievous expression. Sean knows this is going to be good. The end.